Generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coast side, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
Broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalline.
All right, let's do this, Coastsiders. We've got a lot to get to today. Good morning. This is Ruben. Good morning, Crystalline.
Good morning.
It's Friday, November 7th, 2025. Time for some Coastal Windage. Also in studio today, right now, I'm looking at him right now, show favorite, three-time guest already this year, city council person from District 3, Paul Nagengast. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Ruben. Good morning, Crystalline.
Good morning.
Paul's going to give us kind of a state of the city situation. We're going to grill him. We've had the interns working. I had them working all night. Like, just go through every agenda for, like, the last, since Paul's been elected, study everyone, and whenever he had to pause and was, like, not sure and maybe a little uncomfortable, that's the topic we're going to ask him about. Okay, and we've got at least one topic to talk to him about. Paul's too good. Okay, let's get right to it, because, like I said, it's a really big show. Thank you to Michelle Dragony for being on last week. Michelle and Crystalline killing it, as always. I was away, but now I'm back, and so here we go. Here's our topics for today. Halloween is so over, asterisk. We'll get to the asterisks in a second. Football, comma, state of 2025, our second attempt at this one. We got to do it, though, because last night was the big game. Shooting the Breeze, live interview with Paul Nagengast, the aforementioned Half Moon Bay District 3 City Council person. Okay, this is Coastal Windage every Friday morning, 1710 a.m., 100.9 FM, or khmbradio.com. Hit the Listen Live button or go to the podcast page. All 338 episodes to date are available there, going back to 2017. Okay, our air quality report, traffic and weather are so 20th century. It's about the air we breathe. The things you can't see, we give it to you. Remember, the quality rating scale, 0 to 50, incredible. 51 to 100, pretty good. Beyond that, irrelevant to us. Maybe if we're looking at Mexico City or something, we might need to get into the plus 100. But today, we don't have that. So those are the only two ranges you need to worry about today. At El Granada, 25, pretty good, but a little high for us. 47 in Half Moon Bay. Somebody's burning a fire down there this morning. 18 in Redwood City. 14 in Santa Cruz. And today, remember, this is the Easter egg. Can you figure it out? For some Windage bucks. Today in Canton, Ohio. 57 in Canton. Okay, Windage bucks. You want these. Come on, it's over $100 worth of discounts and savings at 13 local businesses. If you can figure out why Canton, Ohio, is our Easter egg location for the air quality report, call us, 650-560-9851, and we'll give you a Windage bucks. Okay, Halloween is so over. Asterisk. The asterisk is except in Monterra, where they still rock a serious Halloween on a couple of streets there. But when I say Halloween is so over, not only is Halloween past, Halloween has jumped the shark. It's over. I am totally over that holiday. And you know what? America has Americanized that holiday. And what I mean is In the 70s and 80s, Halloween peaked. That's what that everything that's happening now about Halloween is about what happened in the 70s and 80s. Big groups of kids in homemade costumes going to homes with hand-carved jack-o'-lanterns and lots of candy. And big groups of kids and kids looking forward to it all day and being super excited about this day and the free candy. None of that. None of that is what Halloween is now. It's not even a Hallmark holiday. It's a landfill holiday. Plastic, store-bought costumes that the kids don't even care about. This is all about their parents and the nostalgia of the 70s and 80s when Halloween peaked. And it's just, like I said, it's a landfill holiday. It's gross. Kids don't care. I don't know what happened, but candy, when I was a kid back in the olden days, if you got a big bag of free candy, that was a huge deal. And you would scarf off of that for like 6 months. Now kids, they don't care. There's so much candy around. There's no draw to them like getting free candy. And the evidence of that is, since I grew up in the middle of nowhere, there was no trick or no, not one ever person ever came to our door. And if they had, it would have freaked everybody in the house out. Come to our door for Halloween. Because we're in the middle of nowhere down a dirt road with a locked gate. So occasionally they'd take us to our grandparents' house, where in the Pacific Beach, California, where there was sidewalks and houses, and we'd get the big bag of candy. Kids don't do that anymore. Every year since I have lived with my wife, we put out candy. I the first few years I was buying like huge bags of candy. I had like a big bowl with the candy, and then I had a bowl with like canned green beans and paper clips. It's trick or treat, right? So I'd play with the kids. You, here you go. Here's your green beans. Oh, it's a trick. Here's the candy.
Did you have your windows soaped every night?
No, because the kids loved it. It was fun. I was having fun with it for the four kids that came to the door. So I'm and Halloween candy is ridiculously expensive now. So I was buying bags and bags of it, and you know, having to give it away to the teenagers that came at 9:30 with, you know, no costume on. Okay, so it's not a thing anymore. Kids don't look forward to it. They don't care. This is all driven by their parents. Nobody's making homemade costumes. I'm over it. Stop pretending like this is some big deal to the kids. It's not.
It is.
Okay, and what kids are you dealing with that it's a big deal to?
The big kids.
Exactly.
No, so, like, my dad, he does this amazing pirate. He turns the whole front of his house into a pirate fight, very Disney-esque. And the kids get so excited to go on his block and stuff. And he's estimated that they had 200 kids come by their house this year. And I've seen a lot of talk online. And so I think there's been a shift. And it used to be that people would trick or treat in their own neighborhood. And that has shifted to a few neighborhoods. So the neighborhoods that go all out, like the ones in Montero or my dad's neighborhood, they're the ones that people are flocking to because they want the experience. They want to see all of the things. Don't interrupt me. And they, you got to talk. Now I get to talk. So the more kind of fun and over the top that the houses get, I think they attract the families. And so I did see a lot of scuttle online where somebody would post, like, what happened to Halloween? Like, I had no kids, this and that. But then for every person who posted that, there's somebody else who posted that who was like, our Halloween keeps getting bigger and bigger. So I think it just depends.
And my turn, because, you know, you mentioned the 70s and 80s. I'm probably going to reflect my age.
Oh, wait, also, homemade costume. I made a homemade costume. I always make a homemade costume.
But you're the demographic I'm talking about.
But if I had kids, I would be making their costumes too. So, and you can't fault parents that don't have time to make costumes.
Well, I went 1 year as a green bean, and everybody thought I was a green moon. So
that's green moon?
That's the problem with homemade costumes. Sometimes it's in the eye of the beholder. But the 70s and 80s, where I remember, where they played before daylight savings time, before they played around with it. Some days we wouldn't even have it on the 31st. It would be during the day on a Sunday or Saturday afternoon.
What?
They wouldn't even have it on a Friday night. It would be on a different night. There was concern about safety. And remember, who did what with candy? There were razor blades. Oh my God! Every apple.
There was never
every apple had that razor blades.
That never happened. Right. There never was one single razor blade in one apple.
Understood, but that's the fear out there. And now, a lot of these are now adults now with their own children. They go to where they think it's safe, and where they're safe is where they're groups of people. And I can tell you, we had hundreds in our neighborhood. Literally, I mean, you have to close up shop sometimes if you're running out of candy. Now, I hear the costumes now aren't as, they don't have to be as original, you know, whatever famous movie or, and I, there was a time I could pick them out when my son was younger, but now I'm like, okay, who are you?
I mean, nobody's going around in a homemade green bean costume.
No. There may be a reason for that one, though.
Well, and everybody going to a neighborhood, this is what I'm saying. Like, everybody's getting their cars and driving somewhere else instead of just walking around their own neighborhood
But if your neighborhood doesn't do anything to make it fun...
Then make it fun.
Well, so talk to the house owners. Talk to the people who... our neighborhood, we've got two houses that, you know, try to do it up and stuff like that. But they're because they're the only two and there's 17 other houses on our street that look dark and dank... Kids aren't coming to our neighborhood.
Yeah, I think Halloween's fun. Right?
Halloween is amazing.
No, it used to be. It is no longer. Okay.
I just want to acknowledge that Dad Brad is listening right now, and he, I will show you after, but he sent you, via me, a video of his very cool Halloween.
I mean, again, Dad Brad is the demographic I'm talking about that is sentimentalizing what Halloween used to be and pushing it forward.
And the 200 kids that went to his house had a good time. The however many people go to Montera have a good time. And then as they grow up, enough of them will love Halloween and will do the same. It's a ripple effect, sir.
For the first time in over 30 years, I didn't even buy Halloween candy and we didn't hand any out.
I'm going to soap your windows.
Okay. Sunday will be 9 months since my bicycle accident. And Sunday also will be the first time I will have hit a golf ball since then. My son turns 18 next weekend, so I'm taking him to do the back nine at Oracle Ballpark. Have you ever done this? It's like Top Golf, only at the Giants Stadium. They put some markers down on the field, and you get to hit off of tee boxes that range from the upper deck to the Coke bottle to down at the dugout on the field. It's super fun. We did it last year. I'm a little nervous because, like I said, I haven't I've swung the club a few times, but I haven't hit a golf ball with it. But we'll see. I mean, it's not like
will you report back if you go and do the event, swing the golf club a couple of times, and still don't hit a golf ball? Because that's the story I want to hear.
That's my normal game. I mean, I'm hoping that because everything's messed up, suddenly I'll just be hitting it purely, you know. So who knows? Paul, have you ever done this event?
No, I haven't.
I know you're a golfer.
Right. And I've heard a lot about it.
You should. It's really fun. Last year we went during the evening, so it was all dark out in the city lights and the bridge lights. It was amazing, especially when you get up on the upper deck and you've got a golf club in your hand. You're like, oh, my God, I'm hitting a golf ball from the upper deck, and I'm looking at the Bay Bridge. That's amazing. Okay, it's really cool. Check it out. It's only for 1 week each year. It's this week. New shopping carts at New Leaf. I know. This is the state of my life, that this is how excited I am.
Hot gossip.
I am jacked about the new shopping carts at New Leaf. They're just the little minis, right? The little half carts. But they're brand new, so they don't have the rust, and they're not pieces falling off of them like normal coastside shopping carts, but they've got brand new rubber wheels, and so they just roll so smoothly, like on the floor. Oh my God, is it just me? No, really, nobody else is excited about the new carts.
Do the wheels lock up if you leave certain area out of the parking lot?
You can totally do like a little like synchronized dance with spinning them around and pushing them back and forth, and like I wish I had like a bungee. I'm gonna take a bungee cord next time and like attach it.
I look forward to this routine in the Knights of Lights parade.
Exactly. But I need like 7 or 8 other people so we can do like
start
a coordinated
recruiting
thing. All right, if you want to be part of Ruben's newly shopping cart brigade, give us a call. 650-560-9851. Is that even the right number? It is. Wow. Okay. Voted on Tuesday. That was a weird election. I only vote on election day in person because I'm old, and that's the way I like to do it. And it means a lot to me to go to a polling place and vote and get the on a piece of paper that I got to fill in the dots. And I did that, and it was weird because there was only one dot to fill in. Well, there was two dots, a yes or a no. But that was weird because it took, you know, they're checking stuff and they're printing stuff off and they're marking stuff on a list. And then they hand me the thing and I open it up and it's two dots. So that was a weird election, a one vote election. But it's important to me. Did you both vote?
Yes.
Mail in or in person?
Mail.
Okay. I mean, that's
also
acceptable.
I was in Southern California at a conference. So
voting is what's the key word here. Not whether you mail. You mail it in or go to a place. Many people cannot go to a polling place.
Although we used to. I mean, these are the things of like saying we can't do stuff that we used to do. Doesn't resonate.
But you can vote. The important thing is voting, not how you do it.
I agree with that. Right. But to say that some people can't vote. People voted in person only on the day of hundreds of years.
I wouldn't have been able to vote if there wasn't a mail-in option because I had to be in Southern California. So there you go.
That's why we have the ability. And a lot of employers are not the same as it was in the 1960s. You know, it's a different, and we have different ways to tabulate votes. That's a different conversation, probably a different
show.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, continuing on with cool things happening around. The grand opening of the new Taco Bell was yesterday. If you drove by there, they had a DJ and a line where they are handing out vouchers for free tacos or something and balloons. Okay, here we go. We're trying to give away these Windage Bucks. You've got the Easter egg. Here's another one. A Windage Buck for the next caller who can tell us the last two businesses in the current Taco Bell location. If you can give us both of those last two businesses. Anyway, so that's a great location.
Mm-hmm.
Much better than their middle of the strip mall. Don't even have a sign on the street. Where is it? Oh, what is this? A Taco Bell in here? It's like a Taco Bell. It was like a Taco Bell annex, you know. But now they've got the premier location. I'm a little bit worried about traffic, though, because you're going to have cars coming in off of 92, off of 1, in off of 1, out off of 1, in off of 92, out off of 92. It's a great location for Taco Bell. I don't know about Coast Side traffic. Okay. Moving on. I got to move on because thoughts on Taco Bell?
Yay.
If you could have one fast food, I think it's everybody. Anyways, anybody who grew up in California, and I know, Paul, that doesn't include you, but you've been here a long time. If there's one fast food franchise that you wish was on the Coast Side, what would it be?
Jack in the Box.
Ooh. Oh, my sister's loving you right now. She lives in a non-Jack in the Box state. And so every time she comes here, it's like on the drive home from the airport, she's like, we're stopping at Jack.
That sourdough Jack is is the best thing ever.
And Paul,
without promoting In-N-Out, but
exactly. That's exactly.
But I mean, any
Frank the Engineer is concurring.
But any restaurant that wants to come to Half Moon Bay.
Yeah.
Oh, brother. Okay. Gee, I forgot I have a council person and the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce. Oh, brother. No Applebee's. No, we're not accepting applications from an Applebee's. I have an Applebee's thing. We'll tell that story later, but Applebee's can go to heck. Okay.
Apple booze.
Yeah, thank you. Speaking of Halloween. All right, football, state of 2025. Before I get to my brilliant prediction and how it's literally coming true every day, last night was the big game, the rivalry game, the high school rivalry game on the Coast Side, the only game that counts all season, Half Moon Bay versus Terra Nova. This is a real thing. Like, prior to getting into high school sports with my son, like, all right, is it that big of a deal? It's a big deal. It's a big deal to the kids and the communities. So last night was the 61st annual Skull Game. It's called the Skull Game because in a rivalry game, there's a themed trophy that whichever team wins gets to keep for the year. This is a gigantic saber-toothed tiger skull in a glass case that has plaques or little placards for each year of the skull game. Side note, though, the skull game's trophy has only been around since 2005. But the game has been around since the early 60s, mid-60s. This is the 61st annual, called the Annual Battle for the Bones. And it really matters. And last night, Half Moon Bay went to Terra Nova and prevailed 59-28.
Ooh.
And yes, that was a lot of scoring, and a lot of kids did great. And can I just say, I'm just going to do it. My son threw a touchdown pass.
Congratulations!
Like a 50-yard in the air touchdown pass.
Whoa!
To Will Wimsett, who is first year playing football and is turning out to be wide receiver number one for the Cougars. Okay.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
I want to say there's another big local football game tomorrow. The Coastside Cougars 12U Pop Warner football team will be hosting a playoff game versus the Santa Cruz Seahawks. That's tomorrow at 5 p.m. at the Half Moon Bay High School field. So under the lights, that'll be really cool for the little guys. Come out and show your support for these Coastside players. Cheer your hometown team. Kids under 18 get in free. $15 for adults. That should be pretty fun. These are kids that are matriculating up to play for the Half Moon Bay High School. As well, they are joined by kids that come from the Cunha Flag Football Program. Okay, let's recap my brilliance. If we have time, we don't, but I'll do a digested version, which is on December 1st, 2017. I made my futurist proclamation that 25 years hence, the NFL will be a flag football league. At the time, practically laughed off the air, at least a level 9 eye roll. Of course, coming from Ruben, it was a bold and visionary announcement at the time. At the time, there was no flag football at all in the NFL or anywhere else except for some small local youth leagues and middle school leagues. But now, every year since we've done this segment, we have marched towards that moment when the NFL will be a flag football league. So let's just look at what has happened since last year's update. And remember, you heard it here and you heard it here first. Okay. Since that first proclamation in 2017, Pro Bowl, the NFL's All-Star game, is now a flag football game. Okay. Flag football is now an Olympic sport, or it will be in 2028. A collaborative effort involving the NFL, USA Football, and the International Federation of American Football. College scholarships are now being offered by schools with programs and endorsed by the NFL. NFL Flag is an NFL program intended to promote flag football at the college and youth levels. 20 million people participating globally across more than 100 countries. Since last year's report, which we gave on 12/27/24, okay, these are things that have happened. This is semi-random, but related. My son is playing football. My wife and I were against it, but we agreed to let him do it. And I would have to say it's been pretty fun for him. That's an aside, but that has happened since last year. Half Moon Bay High School, this year for the first time, had a girls' flag football team. This was their inaugural season. This is the progression. There's a girls' flag football team, so now girls can play football. You know what? Within a few years, in addition to the boys' flag football, or the boys' tackle and the girls' flag, there will be a boys' flag football team. And for a while, the quote-unquote real football players will still play tackle, but eventually some of the athletes will start to play flag, and then more will play flag because of the lack of injuries. Almost every kid, having gone to most of the games this year and seen this team, this tackle football team in Half Moon Bay High, almost every kid has missed a game from some kind of injury, mm-hmm. which is not going to happen with flag. Okay, the girls flag football team, 3-7 in their inaugural season, 3-4 in league. They got their first win in school history against El Camino, 25-20 on October 1st. And they beat Terra Nova 27-6 last week. They even got a new article about them on CoastsideNews.com. Cunha Intermediate School tried to get a girls flag football team going this season, but because it's the same season as volleyball, not enough girls came out. We'll get there. I think Cunha will have a girls flag football next year. The NFL Professional Flag Football League. The NFL-branded Professional Flag Football League. Paying people to play flag football, branded NFL. We're getting closer every year. announcement from NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. Earlier this season, the NFL is set to launch professional flag football leagues for both men and women within the next couple of years. Ah, so good. I am. NFL officials have indicated the league will leverage the fast-paced and skillful nature of flag football to create an exciting product for broadcast and streaming platforms. This is what I'm talking about. There's too much money. You can't like a player these days and tackle football. They're hurt. They're out. Another thing about flag football is they won't wear helmets, and that's something the NFL has always talked about with their branding and marketing. You can't see. It's hard to market their players because they're always covered up. Guess what? They won't be now. All right, the Fanatics football flag football classic. This really makes me mad, but whatever. A round-robin tournament with 3 8-player teams composed of former NFL greats and current stars. This is a football tournament that they're paying professional NFL players, current players, and past players to play in a tournament. They're paying them money to play in a flag football tournament. It will air live on Fox Sports and Tubi, whatever the heck that is, with actor and comedian Kevin Hart serving as host. Unfortunately, beyond being whatever, I don't know why I said that, but unfortunately, it's being held at the Kingdom Arena in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, on 21st March 2026. So if you were unhappy about the comedy festival there and have a list of comedians that you'll never see, support again, as I do, as I am keeping that list. Here are the players and coaches that will be participating in the sports washing flag football tournament that the NFL is doing with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Tom Brady, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey of the 49ers, CeeDee Lamb, Max Crosby, Brock Bowers, Tyreek Hill, Rob Gronkowski, Sauce Gardner, Miles Garrett, and more. Three coaches, Pete Carroll of the Raiders, Sean Payton of the Broncos, and Kyle Shanahan of the 49ers. Per the NFL, the Fanatics Flag Football Classic could mark the start of a new chapter, one where flag football becomes a global phenomenon and the NFL's future is no longer confined to American shores and a handful of international games during the regular season. Read NFL Flag Football League. Am I right? Yes. That, I mean, this is how it's going to happen, okay? With 2 minutes, here's how it's going to happen. First, we're going to have a preseason game that's flag football, right? Maybe the first one where they're just coming out of summer and they're barely, you know, maybe they got the pads on but no helmets and it's flag football, okay? That'll be. Then all preseason games will be flag football because we don't want anybody getting hurt in the preseason. They already have reduced preseason games from 4 to 3. So, okay, that may kind of make sense. Then, as we've been doing for the past decade or so, where we've had a game in Mexico City or London or something, there'll be one, like, featured game that's a flag football game for some reason somewhere. Then an increasing number of regular season games, and maybe a quarter of the season, every other game will be, like, they have a bye. Every other game will be a flag game to, you know, extend careers and load management and stuff. And then, ultimately, just the playoffs will be tackled. You know, keep everybody healthy, watch the high-paced action and athletic ability of the players, and then when we get to playoffs, then it's regular, you know, in the trenches football. So that's how it will happen. Alternative scenario, because players will continue to get hurt at an increasing rate, injury repairs will increasingly feature non-organic then bionic solutions, and players will evolve to be various degrees of semi-bionic humans. Eventually, the players will be full robotic non-humans who are likened and nominally played in games as avatars by their original humans.
And then we'll all be in bubble wrap.
All right. And then the worm will turn, and eventually the robots will be having humans play the football and controlling them. And we're back to the gladiator era. And there's your full circle. Ponder that while we go to this commercial break. When we come back, Paul Nagengast on the hot seat.
This is community radio for the Coast Side.
100.9 KHMB.
Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
Hi, this is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me and Stan Warren Littrell coming up at 10 o'clock right after Coastal Windage. We'll have a look at today in history, plus we'll get to a brand new forgotten find. It all happens at 10 a.m. right here from 100.9 FM KHMB.
All right, and we're back. And during the break, Paul Nagagast, our Shooting Breeze live interview guest, not only did he figure out the Easter egg, he also got the two businesses that were in the place where Taco Bell is now. But disclaimer, we have to have like a guy with this kind of voice. Maybe your dad could do it. He's got a good... Can he do a real fast disclaimer voice like this? Interview guests are not eligible for prizes at Windage Box. Okay. All right. So here we go. Our Shooting the Breeze live interview with Paul Nagagast. Paul, you are now 1 year in as city council person.
Technically 11 months. I got my Please. Son swore me in December 16th. 2024. So technically 11.
With what's going on at the national level, does your time starts when you get elected or when you get sworn in? Because we are having a problem right now with the gap between being elected somewhere and being sworn in. Right. So
Half Moon Bay is being sworn in.
You start your clock with when you got sworn in. Yeah. Okay. So still, we talked about this. You were off living the life of Riley. You were out. You were golfing. You were enjoying life. And then for some reason, you decided to walk back into the lion's den and be a public servant. Still happy with that decision?
Yes. I mean, it's still, of course, it's still new. I'm not going to say there isn't hiccups or... So there are moments like, oh, my God, why did I do this? But then I'm reminded somebody will come up to me and say, thank you so much for recognizing or asking that question or listening to me, because not everybody's comfortable showing up at a council meeting. So we get a lot of phone calls, emails, texts to try to represent, you know, beliefs or opinions from others that, again, not comfortable to show up. And I get that. You know, speaking as a speaker is not for everybody. It took me 3 shows to be comfortable here with YouTube, across from YouTube. But and also, I'm learning that I'm not the only one that has an opinion about things, believe it or not. So I have 4 other council members that have ideas. Believe it or not, I may never even considered or thought of. So I think deliberation is really good on the council level to hear things. You know, it's not, you know, we talk about districts, and obviously there's things that are important in each one of our districts, but especially a town with 12,000 more or less, and, you know, the small town here, our decisions affect everybody.
Well, you know? It's interesting that you bring up districts, because, you know, we're pretty much any municipality in California was forced to districtize a few years back under threat of lawsuit. And I've been wondering, like, at what point, if and when, and maybe what would be the issue that would cause it, when the 5 districts that now comprise City of Half Moon Bay voting areas might be pitted against each other for some kind of funding or some kind of project or something like that. Have you seen any evidence of that?
No.
And what could be a project? What could be something that might cause that, where the constituents of one of these districts?
Mr. Cotter.
Okay, Horshack. Yes.
To remind everybody, I used to work on the other side. The easiest thing, I used to run.
What does the other side mean?
I used to work with city
private
staff.
Sector?
I was a city engineer, public works director, deputy city manager. I used to run from council. And now, obviously, I ran for council. And being a part of it is the one thing that always got district's attention is pavement, street paving. That is so visible you know, we were always careful to make sure. If there were communities having districts even early on before every city in California is required to have them, but we made sure that we had proportionally provided funding, because you would have a council member make sure that happened. what we tried to do to eliminate that type of decision making, which you can't totally pull politics out of it, but we came up with these pavement condition indexes, and that gives a number to a pavement. So a really bad street might be a 40, where a good street might be 80. So you want
to
maybe...
What's the scale, 0 to 100?
0 to 100. So yeah. You're trying to get to a point where, and I'm trying not to get too technical here, but you try to repaint the wall. What I mean by that, add new life to that street so it doesn't get so bad that you have to totally tear it out and rebuild it. That's your big bucks. But if you can extend the life of the pavement with the quarter of the cost, that's a great investment, and you can, you know, keep that. And it doesn't care what district. Streets know no boundaries. So that is something I think really helps not only staff, city staff, but also council members realize, no, a budget affects all of us. So what we want to do is help to preserve the streets that we can with the least amount, get the biggest bang for our buck, so to say. So we are using, and I think you've heard it, this last paving project, city staff talked about a pavement condition index. And that's what we're trying to do. Those numbers mean something, and that's how you make your decisions on which streets you're going to do paving or what a type of surface treatment. You know.
So you have circumvented this potential competition or conflict between the districts by coming up with this plan.
I can't tell you you're not going to care what about my street, but yes, that to me, and it is a fair, you know, even seeing on the other side, would I like streets paved in front of my house? Of course I would, but if it's not necessary, and I know there's other streets that need we get more value if we would fix those streets, absolutely.
And I, as somebody who sits in the audience all the time, I do appreciate it when there is a system in place like the pavement index that takes out the subjectiveness. So it's like, I think you run into these issues of people, you know, having infighting about a project or a want or a need if there's no, you know, no way to say that there's a pavement with a 40 and a pavement with an 80. And so we're going to do the 40 this year and do the 60s next year and all that. Like, there's still a lot of ordinances out there that are very open to the interpretation of whoever is the one, you know, moving forward with it. And I just do really appreciate it when there are things like this where you can just put a measure to it.
And yeah, I mean, and as elected, I appreciate it too. Because it's, you know, it's not, here it is. And I'm an engineer. I'm a civil engineer. So here it is. There's the criteria. Right. Yes, this makes absolute good sense.
And as a constituent and as a citizen, it makes me, like, feel a little bit better about the whole system in that there's not going to be favoritism. And whoever has the loudest voice or whoever has, you know, constituents that are more quote unquote important might get their streets paved. Yeah, we've got a quantitative, you know, objective look at it, and those are the streets to get paved. Great. I like that. Let's go to a topic that involves both of you. I read that the Opportunity Center of the Coastside is closing after what, 1 year, 2 years?
2 years.
2 years. Okay. So the question to both of you, we'll get to why it's closing we'll come from behind on that. But the first question I want to ask you is, would you consider the 2 years a success or not? Since it's closing, success, yes, it's helped some people. Success, not. It's closing. It didn't help enough people. How would you look at this?
I think the original concept and how we had gone into the project was very strong. And I think that as time went on, because there was so many people involved, that I think some things that we had thought would work didn't quite work
as
well.
When you say so many people, like different agencies and organizations or actual individuals?
A mix of both. And so I think the concept is great. I do think having multiple organizations that being housed together when their missions are like very complementary of one another, but each one does something different. I think that is a fantastic concept. But you do have to have the right people at the right levels to make that work very well and collaboratively. So I think there were parts of it that were very strong, and I think there were parts of it where there were lessons learned. And personally, if we were to go down this road again, there are things that I would hope would be done differently. So I think it's a mixed bag. I don't think it can be fully claimed as like a resounding success, and it was not a complete failure either. It's just a very mixed bag of a learning experience and really understanding who needs to be where to make things work, and like what exactly does collaboration mean to everybody, because that's something that has a definition that's different to everybody. And for some people, just being in the same room is collaboration, whereas for other people, actually like working on projects together where everybody has an equal voice, like that's collaboration for some people. So I think there's a lot of wrinkles that would need to be worked out. I know for us as the chamber, we do not plan on we're going to go back to kind of our pillars, and one of them is business development education. It's my understanding that Renaissance and Job Train and the Incubator do plan to try to move forward just more individually. So I don't think the services are going away per se. They're just not going to all be in the same building.
And there is some redundancy on some services. I mean, it's something helping with resumes. I mean, there are ways, I think there, but I understood, you know, with the CSM coming here, the college, there's some courses, there's some opportunities, same with the library, some things to be able to.
Well, and that was one of the things in the very beginning that the chamber and city staff had really put forth as one of the things we did not want to see happen. So we did know that some of the organizations would have overlapping services with, let's say, Coastside Hope or the library, and CSM and things like that. And we really wanted to emphasize the organizations that were coming to the Coastside, don't reinvent the wheel. If the wheel is already here, let that wheel turn and just bring in the new stuff. But I think there was just some differing opinions about what those things were. And so, again, lessons learned.
Right. And we're in a structural deficit. And it was a number for the city to try and pick up. Remember, this thing was created with the money from the grant. I think it was COVID money.
Yes, it was.
And that money was...
We always knew that money was ending. We always knew that this project would have a very, very high chance of ending after its two-year pilot.
So I saw somebody complaining on Nextdoor that the budget for the amount of money spent on this was like $2.5 million or something for X amount of people helped, which wasn't that many, although we had a person on this show who it helped, Carlos Acosta, of Foggy Clothing, was on our show last month.
Yeah.
So I guess the question, the larger question, which our society, our country is struggling with right now is... So $2.5 million to help X amount of people, which maybe is not as many people as it could have or people would like. But if it helped anybody, somebody, was it worth it? And so that's a question I have for both of you. For $2.5 million, was it worth it?
Yes. But which I know, I understand, sounds self-serving because I was, you know, one of the organizations that did get paid to do a portion of the project. But again, I think lessons were learned. So it's like if we were to go down this road again, we would be able to understand things better. We were not the only center. We were one of three. I think there is room for growth in the fact that the three centers didn't really know if we were orphans or sisters. And so there could be some real strength if they were brought back and were more sisterly and more related. But ultimately, yes, if that $2.5 million grant, which came through the county, which was funded by the federal, had that not come, the people that were helped by Renaissance and Job Train would not have probably been helped at all. They were not people that were going to be able to go over the hill predominantly to get the services from these organizations. They probably wouldn't have even known the organizations existed. And so at the time that it came post-COVID, then I think in that regard, it was very important. And I think it also eased up a little bit of the burden on some of the other nonprofits that would have really felt compelled to help these people post-COVID with, like, finding a job or starting their business, but that's not necessarily where their core competencies lie. And I would much rather Coastside Hope and Alas and Puente be able to do what they do best because they, you know, rock it out and not get distracted on trying to help people with something that they would also then be having to learn. So I think, again, there's...
Right, and I'm not going to disagree with what the chamber said. Yes, and the city, we're just not set up for these this type of programs. You know, our council now, we've made it very clear our priorities. It's been referred to as back to basics, mm-hmm. and just trying to take care of some of the improvements we talk about. We just talk about paving, but there's some big drainage issues in our community that we need to be focusing on. In the middle of a structural deficit, trying to figure out how much, you know, trying to have staff retention. So it's just a number of things, you know, competing funds in Half Moon Bay, where our council, we made a decision. We didn't have the ability to, especially since we're not set up to be a social net or a program to offer to community where the county was more set up.
Right, and I also want to note that we always knew that city council was not going to be able to pick up this bill. It was always on us collectively as a group to find funding beyond what the county, because we knew that the county was not renewable. And of course, this was 2 years ago. This was before anything was coming down the pipe like it is now, about the stretch in funding and so many people losing funding and all that. So even before any of that was even in our mirror, we knew that the county was not refundable. The county was not going to just give out another $2 million to keep this thing up and going. It was on the group collectively between the five organizations to find funding to keep it sustainable, and unfortunately that just did not pan out.
I mean, I know it's a coincidence, but it just doesn't, hearing the Opportunity Center closing just doesn't feel good in a moment in time when, you know, SNAP funding is not there, when the government shut down. It's like, you know, I know it's coincidence, but it doesn't feel good. So, okay. But so bigger issues, drainage and street paving and structural deficit. But I had the interns look. So a big topic on the last agenda, the proposed storefront maintenance ordinance. Where do you come down on this, Paul? Is this really necessary?
We have listened to the business community.
Yeah, okay. Because I want to ask you. Yeah. Who's driving this? Complaints from the public, shop owners, tenants, property owners? Who's driving this?
All the above. And what I mean by that is as simple as clear definition, who's responsible for what, when. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's a landlord, a tenant, a business owner, or the city. Where does the city fall in this? You know, a lot of issues are coming up about public right-of-ways. And believe it or not, we're going to have a workshop with the Planning Commission to go over fire code coming up November 18th. And the new fire codes and the fire maps may even, they're looking at anything, like even these planters next to a brick building. So
yep.
Not saying that's what Half Moon Bay is going to do, but, you know, if the fire, the way they are, they'd want the whole world concreted.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can walk ourselves through this on November 18th, find out what we really need to do, whether does that mean all awnings, all trees, street trees? Are we going to do that too? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but these are the things we need to clarify. And there's a few buildings in town that attract attention as far as maybe not in the best repair. And, you know, again, I think beauty's in the eye of the beholder, you know, and something when you, you have to be careful when you do these type of ordinances. You're not pitting, we used to call it neighbor versus neighbor, but you're not pitting somebody else. Again, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I may think that's a great window, and you may say, I can't see, you know, mm-hmm. it's not a good window. So where do you, you know, how do you draw that line? So these type of ordinances are very difficult. We had the, and it's called a vitality ordinance. You know, it's not blight. It's not,
you know. We're right. We had to get some 1984 naming in here, right?
Interesting.
It's a vitality ordinance.
But trying to determine what is it, you know, what do we want the look without being Gestapo-like or 1984.
Well, so I just want to note, so this was not something that was imposed by the city. So,
well, it hasn't.
This process was not imposed by the city. The chamber started asking city staff back in 2019 when it was very clear that the printer's building was only getting worse and worse and worse and worse.
Which happens to be my favorite building on Main Street. It harkens back to...
But it's also a hazard.
Is it?
Yes. And so there's planks that fall down onto the sidewalk and things like that. So, and again, it's not necessarily about the look and feel. We are not trying to become Carmel or something that is over-ordinanced. I mean, Carmel's got ordinances for everything. That's not the goal. The goal is to try to ensure that buildings that have just very clearly been abandoned and are just more and more becoming a hazard. And it's also, it hurts the downtown merchants if there's a section of the street that is not active. And currently, we cannot rely on the building owners that don't live here, that live in, you know, across the United States, or the building has, the original building owner who did love it and it was their pride, have maybe passed away. It went to their kids and their kids just couldn't even be bothered. And the city doesn't have anything to lean on to say, hey, your building is literally about to fall apart on people. It's being red tagged. Like, you need to do something about this. And so the chamber had been asking, and then as a part of the Downtown Merchants Association, who also meets every month, and Paul's been there, and Mayor Brownstone has been there, and city staff has been there. There's also been this constant conversation about the look and feel of Main Street and the fact that Main Street just continues to get a little bit dirtier and a little bit dirtier. And like, who is in charge of what? Like, who needs to clean the sidewalk and who? And a lot of that, the answer was no clue. No, we don't know if this falls on the city. We don't know if this falls on the shop owners. And so this ordinance is meant to kind of create some clarity where there's a lot of open-endedness and just ensure that downtown and the shopping centers and all of the different commercial areas in the city limits are welcoming to the residents, and they don't feel like they are living in a town where they pay a lot of money to live here or a lot of money to visit here, and that they don't walk away being like, this place is kind of looking like a dump.
Right. Well, and we're visitor serving, and
yes,
we need to acknowledge that and embrace that. And I support that 100%. We're in a structural deficit. Come on, how do we, you know, how are we going to get out of this? Look, it's our TOT and sales tax. That's what we rely on. Okay, so then it's, you know, it's not just, you know, the downtown area. You know, there's other areas. There was a lot of difficulty with some storage bins and dumpster bins in a shopping center area. So what happens when you create an ordinance, it's not just for one street, becomes citywide. So this ordinance was, the first reading was continued to a date certain, to December 2nd. So the feedback that staff got from the council means make sure all the businesses, whether it's the Strawflower Shopping Center or any of the downtown merchants, landlords, property owners, see this and see what's coming. And frankly, I've heard, and we discussed about, there's some things in the ordinance as it was written that had financial effects on them. And there was some concern about, you know, with the dumpsters and trash. So we're trying to be very sensitive to that. What burden is, what was meant by this ordinance, as opposed to, I hate this other term, unintended consequences, where something else is happening.
All right, we've got 5 minutes left, so we need to skip around, hot jump around. I'll just end this discussion with, I was a little dismayed when the intern showed me a quote from the staff report. Staff reviewed comparable ordinances from other jurisdictions, including San Jose, Santa Cruz, and Berkeley. Those don't seem like comps to Half Moon Bay. So that's something that worries me a little bit about this. I would also say to both of you, I hear what you're saying. I guess I'm not convinced that there's all this complaining coming from all these different segments of the society or our community.
Yeah, you're just not on the receiving end of that phone call.
Well, that's okay. But there's something to be said for the quirkiness and the quaintness of our town, and we don't want to take all of that out of there. Okay, we got
and neither do we.
Good. Okay, we got 4 minutes left, so let's jump around. Quick answers to this. Paul, 555 Kelly, is this happening or not?
Don't know.
In 3 minutes or less.
It's still ongoing.
But where are we on this? I mean, I thought this was going forward.
It's going forward. There's still the last meeting we had. There's portions of components of a lease agreement that are being drafted. So
this is just working out the details. This thing is happening.
I can't tell you what's going on. There's been no action by council.
Okay. Caltrans is doing a lot of work up and down Highway 1. Mm. Did they address your mutton chops at Highway 1 and Kelly?
No. In fact, I brought this up at the council because we're going to promote some things that are happening tonight. I don't want to go too long on this. But if Caltrans had told the city, we only have so much money, CTC, California Transportation Commission, won't give us more money. It was $34 million 1 year ago. Imagine that. It's $47 million today. So they got $14 million more. And part of their thing was, no, we can't get more money. So
okay. So let's leave the last 3 minutes. I think both of you wanted to promote some things that are happening coming up.
Yeah, so tonight there's some fun stuff happening in downtown on Main Street. So there is the first ever Half Moon Bay Diwali event. So that's really exciting. It's a festive night of lights type of ordeal, and that's going to be in Mac Dutra Park.
Right, it's 6 to 8, Mac Dutra. It's all, and I have some friends that helped me out to explain Diwali. It's the first time. This is new for, I'm sure, a lot of people in our community. It's known as the Festival of Lights. It's a joyful occasion, celebrates hope, new beginnings. That's what the triumph of light over darkness. It's a time for friends and families to come together, share happiness, and look forward to a bright future. And a lot of common, what you see at these festivals is, we call it a clay pot with a candle in it. So I'm sure there'll be some of those given away this evening, and it will open up into what else is happening?
So the merchants, many of them on Main Street, have flipped their shops for the holidays. And so in celebration of that, they are doing kind of like a downtown open house type situation tonight. So you can...
Tonight?
So you can go onto Main Street and stroll in and out of these shops that have been, this week were shut down for a couple of days and beautifully decorated. So I think there's Hometown Mercantile and Abode and Jupiter and Main and Juno's and Paper Crane. And so I think Fengari. So I think a lot of businesses are just going to have this beautiful kind of like strolling open house tonight.
So not the window decorating that we'll have around Christmas time. This is a different just kind of...
I believe that most of it will be, they are decorated for the December holidays. Okay. But yes, we will have a separate window decorating contest as a parts of Knights of Lights. But it's just kind of a strolling open house, and I think there's going to be lots of fun little goodies and, you know, just get people thinking about their holiday shopping and shopping local for that.
Well, I only shop local for all of my gifts on the coast side, because these are my friends and neighbors. And also, like, there's cool stuff here. There's amazing artists. There's amazing shops. Why would I want to go to Walmart or Amazon for my friends and family for their gifts? Okay, Paul, thanks for joining us.
Oh, glad to be here.
This is now part of our quarterly thing, checking in with you on the state of the city.
Absolutely.
State
I'm
of
happy
the coast
to do
side.
That.
Thank you to do that. It's great to have you. Coming up, I mean, I don't want to outdo you on this, but coming up hopefully on December 5th, we're in negotiations to have U.S. Representative Sam Liccardo back on the show. That will be Sam's third time on the show. Looking forward to that. And I know you discussed it last week. We're hoping to have somebody from the Harbor Commission come to give some answers or answer some questions about this parking lot proposal. All right. Paul Nagengast, District 3, City Councilperson, Half Moon Bay. Thank you so much for being on the show today. Chris Lynn, as always, amazing. Noah, second engineer Noah, second week on the box today, handling it perfectly. Frank, the engineer, hovering over him like the mother hen that he is. That's fine. Noah is handling this. Interns, awesome job. Audience in the elevated viewing gallery, thank you. Yes, thank you. All right. Okay, until next week, have a great week. Go into Main Street tonight. Walk around Main Street. Woo! And night and the Diwali's
tonight?
Yeah,
Diwali. Not 6 to 8.
6 to 8 tonight. Okay. Thank you for listening. Till next week, Coastal Windage.
The talk of the coast.